The city of Cork is rich with voices and stories.
How did my mum not catch you passing? How did she not catch you passing? My mum loves cameras and radio.
Oh, well, be golly, we'll have to talk to her, so.
Are you from 96 FM? Can I get that one?
The famous Coal Quay Market is a vestige of what it once was. But travel alert, and you find the spirit of the place alive and heart-lifting.
It's actually for RT Radio 1.
Oh, lovely.
And we're delighted to be in Cork.
Of course you are.
On Kyle Street, I'm lucky enough to spend time with second-hand clothes seller Joan Lane and her friend Josephine.
And where are you from, honey?
I'm originally from Leitrim.
Oh.
Joan's daughter Vera minds the stall while we chat.
No, so we can talk here because they're passing there. Yeah. What do the men want to know?
Tell us now what you want to know.
No.
Have you the mic that way or this way?
When first I saw the love light in your eyes, I never thought the world had joy for me. And even though we drifted far apart,
I'm Joan Lane, Kyle Street, Coal Quay. We're in the heart of the city and we're very hard-working women. Rain, hail and snow, we have to work. I'm here since I was a baby, like. I'm 84 now.
But you're not 84. You're not.
I'm 84.
No, I wouldn't have put you at 70.
My first foot down here now was around a Coal Quay with my grandmother, about 9 years of age, with an orange box and a bib she made over hands for me. And I get the pennies in there.
Great.
And she said, take two to your mother now, or I want the rest of them.
Fantastic.
They were great women.
I can understand the children today, they're mad for computers. But when I was a child, we had skipping ropes.
Yeah.
We had skipping ropes.
And Vera, sorry for it too, we used to have a big bottle of tea, of orange, and a big place of
tenora,
sandwiches. And our mother warned us not to come in till 6 o'clock.
Of course. Yeah.
I tell you another time, I haven't the time to tell you today about my husband. He had a very bad accident in the milling company. It was in 1963. He fell 35 feet.
God loves.
I never got one penny from the milling company. Not one penny up to this present day. Oh, I loved you as I never loved before. When first I saw you on the village green.
I remember one time, Vera, my mother used to get things you pay so often. So Mum said she hadn't the money for the man when he comes. So she said, be ready to tell him she's not there. So I went down to the door. She said, my mum said she's not there.
When you were sweet, 16. No.
Hooray!
Beautiful. Beautiful. It's beautiful.
If you're ever around here, call again.
Absolutely,
if I'm not there,
absolutely
talk
will.
To me, dog.
I don't have a cup of coffee.
You're listening to The County Measure. I'm Vincent Woods. We're making a journey around Ireland, 100 years after independence and partition, to get a measure, to get many measures of all 32 counties. We're looking at place, landscape, and the people who shape their lives within these boundaries of community and county. In this series, I'm hoping to get a fresh understanding of each county and its people as we shape a radio atlas of Ireland. Where do you begin to measure a county as vast as County Cork, a county defined in many ways by water, by the sea, by the coast, and of course then Cork City defined by the River Lee, the city and island made by the river. So it seems almost logical to come here to the heart of the city and go on a journey on water.
Hello.
I'm Jack.
Vincent.
Hello, Vincent.
Great to meet you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks
to
a million.
Bye.
Great. Brilliant to be here.
Shane
Murphy.
Lovely to meet you.
Jack O'Keefe and Shane Murphy are part of the Cork Boatyard community known as Metal Mara, whose aim is to foster awareness of maritime and river heritage and encourage the people of Cork to use the waters all around them. Their activities include boat building, seamanship, and traditional maritime skills. Today, the two men are guiding me up a part of the River Lee to better understand the role it plays in the city.
This is Lapps Quay. It's been developed in the last 10 years. There's a hotel, the Clarion. You're looking down here towards the South Mall, which is the commercial street in the city. That is the City Hall on the other side of the river.
Now, Cork, of course, comes Corky, which means a swamp.
Cork City is an island.
It is an island.
Where are we going to go now today?
We'll head up the River Lee under Patrick's Bridge to the Mercy Hospital up to the Mardyke towards the Split Weir.
This is a new bridge, only opened in the last few years. It's named after a woman called Mary Elms, who was known as the Irish Schindler. During the Second World War, she saved Jewish children from the Nazis.
Yes.
And she's been honoured now by this bridge. And the whole history of Cork was a battle against nature, really, because the city, as Jack said, was built on a swamp. It's been a battle against silting and flooding and sinking, very like Venice in a lot of ways,
yeah,
over the years. So huge amounts of labour over the centuries.
Astonishing, you know, when you think,
yeah,
of the work that
absolutely
went into
unbelievable
doing this.
Yeah.
Beautiful. This part of the river is, well, I think is probably the nicest part of the whole Lee. What we're coming on to here up by Fitzgerald's Park with the trees and the houses up on the north bank.
And Fitzgerald's Park we know as the Mardyke. And Mardyke, of course, is a Dutch term. It's the sea wall. So, okay.
Oh, God, we could be in a Cezanne painting or something. It's beautiful,
this is the
greenery.
You know, and we can hear the birds and we see the wildlife, and we are still in the city.
There's a plan in place to remedy the flooding in the city centre by various things, including raising the height of the quay walls, which will limit access to the river. And there's huge opposition to that, hence the banners and Save Cork City and Love the Lee and all that. The alternative plan that's suggested is to build a water barrier similar to the Thames barrier down at Loch Mahon, downstream of the city. Mm. But the official thinking is that it would be A, ineffective, and B, way too expensive. Something has to be done because the city does flood, and catastrophically so, several times over the years, and so something does have to be done.
Jack, is it possible then to, if you like, land somewhere in the city and disembark?
Yes, we maintain two lots of steps, reasonably clear, one at Blackrock and one at Pope's Quay. I don't see a reason why one shouldn't be able to come up and effectively do your shopping by boat. Let's go, we'll go there, have a coffee, and enjoy the city scenery in Cork.
Christy.
Yes.
Vincent.
Vincent, how are you?
Lovely to meet you. How are you? Windy. Windy day.
In the lovely old landscape near Fermoy, close to the Blackwater River and in the Avondhu Blackwater area, I meet local historian Christy Roach, who knows this place inside out. And the interior and exterior worlds of settlement, mythology and imagination reside in the striking 4,000-year-old wedge tomb which sits close to the main road at Labbacolly.
So, Christy, the name, Labbacolly.
Labbacolly means the bed or the grave of the Callack or the old woman. And when it was excavated in the 1930s, they found the remains of a woman inside in the inner chamber at the very back. you have 7-8 stones, and that's a double row. And on top of that, you have three massive stones, the largest one being maybe 30 ton in weight. They did find that this place had been used as a dwelling place, and even men of the Knights of the Road, the tramps, would often use it.
Could protect you from wind and rain.
Yeah, and that. So at the equinox, when the sun is setting there in the west, it'll shine in through the little hole there and illuminate the chamber.
March and September, isn't it? When the day and night are
of equal length.
Yeah.
In those days, they used Newgrange, etc., as calendars. When the days were going to get shorter or longer, or for plenty of crops.
I think for you, Christy, this is as important as Newgrange.
It's twice as important because we get the sun twice a year at the equinox. Newgrange, you only get it once.
Spoken like a true local patriot.
But in the Glanrut area, you have about 10 or 11 megalithic structures. Glanrut, Glaunawir, the Golden Glen, the Glen of the Corn is an indication of why they have settled here, to the good land, around the north of the county there, beyond Mitchelstown. You have some beautiful names like Gortina Tariff, Bonan O'Leary, Tangariska, and it's one area that there's no Norman names, there's no Bellies or that, Some of those names were in use 1,000 years ago and still in use today, every day.
Yeah.
We must never underestimate the local tradition.
Christy, thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
I'm Cormac McCarthy, a musician originally from Ovens, now living in Novel. I've composed a piece for the County Measure called Only Ball Hoppin'. It's a phrase used commonly in Cork City and one which I'd associate with my grandfather, Harry. I'm only ball hoppin' you means I'm only winding you up.
You're listening to The County Measure, and we're in Cork.
Here on the edge of the Atlantic in Cove, one can't but remember all of the people who made their way here. About 2.5 million people left from Cove for America between the 1840s and 1950s, then all the people who were transported to Van Diemen's Land, to Australia, and then the connections into world history, the sinking of the Lusitania off Old Kinsale Head, 1915, and over 1,000 bodies brought in here to Cove. The Titanic, the last stop here before it made its way into that ocean and out to its fate. So much history in this place, looking out Spike Island, Haulbowlin. Some people here still who remember some of it.
It's beautiful to see the ferry going off there, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's off to harbour. So where the ship is now, that's Roach's Point, the lighthouse there, you know.
And where's Spike Island then?
Spike Island is the centre one here, look.
Centre one.
PJ.
PJ.
PJ is my name. Reedy.
My Mary Murphy.
Mary Murphy. Mary, lovely to meet you. Vincent Woods, great. Did you grow up here?
Yeah, I grew up over in Spike Island. My dad was in the army over there. It was an army barracks.
And of course, the British wanted to hold on to it for as long as
they
could.
My dad was there actually when they taken over the forts from the British.
1938.
Yeah, 1938. Yeah. You're bang on the ball. Yeah. Like Spike Island was a prison in the 1800s.
That's right.
There was over 1,000 and something prisoners held there at one stage, imagine. And you were in there for the least little thing.
Of course.
Robbing a bag of potatoes or something that time.
You think of all the famine. All the poor devils who were transported from here as well, to Australia.
That's right,
On a lot of Cove.
They were transported off the harbour here. The ship would come into the harbour here and take them out. And that was it.
You're shy.
You're
shy, little one.
You had a biscuit going around, you wouldn't be shy.
That's the ladies.
Ah, lovely. You're gorgeous.
That's Molly Moore.
Lovely.
That's Molly.
Hello.
Oh, Molly, are you lovely?
Was she 10 or something? You said, Mary, was it?
You can see it by the eyes, under the eyes and all.
And the dog's leaf.
Have a good one yet. She's getting her pension.
Yeah.
Get your pension now next week.
You're getting your pension, Molly.
And I'll buy you lovely things.
Spend it wisely now, won't you?
I'm Sarah Baum, a writer and artist from Cork, and in this short piece, I'm using Google Street View to follow the journey from the house where I mostly live in West Cork to my mother's house where I grew up and still sometimes live in East Cork. I open my laptop to travel virtually along a road I take often in real life. Over the last 8 years that I've lived on the coast just beyond Skibbereen, I have driven the N71 approximately 200 times. At a certain point, I added a line to the end of my author bio. Baum grew up in East Cork and now lives in West Cork, which was really just a sly joke for Corkonians, untranslatable overseas. My drive out does not exist on Google Street View. Instead, the arrow goes into a tailspin at a Y junction, tugging me left and right, barring access. I give up and scoot away through the tangled countryside in the direction of the N71, the main road that leads all the way to Cork City. In order to orientate myself on Street View, it is necessary to travel back in time to the random day when the footage was taken, to a different season, a different year, back when the hawthorn was blossoming, and this empty field was full of bales, and this apparently passive house was no more than an empty field. I glide through the villages, Lepp, Conana, Roscarbery, Lissavard, Clonakilty, Ballinascarthy, Pedlar's Cross, Bandon, Inishannon, and finally the iconic viaduct looms into view, arching high above the traffic. When I was a child, the viaduct was emblematic of summer holidays to Barley Cove. Now, when I meet it travelling east to west, I'm going home. But when I meet it travelling west to east, I'm also going home. Nowadays, I live periodically, physically and psychologically, on both sides of the county, automatically referring to home as the place where I happen not to be at the moment that I make reference. I navigate the city roundabouts where I learned to drive, plunge down into the scooping tunnel beneath the River Lee, resurface at the Dunkettle roundabout, exit onto the N25 dual carriageway, and look out for my slip road to Carrigtwohill. Finally, I return to the same kind of tangled country roads as where I started. On Street View, time has frozen at late summer. The trees are in full leaf. The road is flanked by honey-coloured barley fields. Pink camellia flowers dangle down over my mother's front gate, and I stop in the road and peer through the dark windows of her house and wonder whether or not I am inside.
Here on the edge of Skibbereen in West Cork, so much history, the Island River, and indeed its more recent associations with the Olympic Roars. On the edge of the town is this spot, the Marsh Field, which for some people it might look like a kind of wilderness, nearly a wasteland. But for anyone with a sharp eye, for the scientist, the close observer of nature, realise that it's kind of a natural centre of biodiversity. And one person who's been keeping a close eye on it all and studying it, I'm going to meet her now, is Anne Haig.
Hi.
Anne, hello. How are you doing? Vincent.
Vincent, hi.
So nice to meet you. Yeah.
We're just in a bit of scrub land here beside the rugby pitch, and we'll just get to the riverbank up here and you'll just have a nice view across the river, you know, to the town. So just viewing things from the other side. My son is out and about already, so he is a bird fanatic. I'm sure he'll tell you himself. I just have to close the gate.
Oh yeah. What church is that then across from us? The Catholic church.
It is the Catholic church, yeah.
And then the ruin up beside it.
And then the ruin is the old convent, yeah. So there was a fire there a couple of years ago, so there are plans to redevelop it.
And I've been reading a little bit about this development plan, Town Centre First report, proposing that Skibbereen would have an eco park, that the river frontage would be developed for cafes. I suppose the challenge always with those sorts of reports is how to get the funding and how to push it through.
That's it, exactly. There's two projects for here, this marsh area. One is a car park, you know, with bridges connecting to the town. So as you can see, there's a lot of new trees. There's a lot of wildlife here. There's birds nesting. So it would have to be sensitively done. So they're two separate projects. So I would worry that the car park would go first, you know, and whether, you know, the funding then would come for the eco park.
Cars tend to come first, unfortunately, don't they? A lot of the time.
Yeah. But the river here, you know, is excellent. Over time, we've turned our back to it. And that's what we're recognising now, that, you know, we need to embrace it, do more with it, you know, use it as an amenity to draw tourists in. You know, you can see there's one cafe there, the riverside. It's a wonderful spot, you know, lovely to sit out there. But the rest of it, you can see, is not used. You know, so the idea would be to turn the town around and really sort of embrace our river again. See, there's actually just a San Martin going in the wall over there. See that wall behind, the older wall,
yes,
where they're going in.
Yeah. So did you grow up with nature? Even in school, were you aware of what was around you?
So I'm qualified veterinarian, so always a love of animals. But over the years, I kind of turned towards the wildlife side of things, you know, trying to focus my efforts around science, around wildlife. Yeah. So I think this is probably a fox track here. Yeah. So there's lots of foxes. Yeah. We've also seen otters on here, on the marsh. I suppose that could be a consideration with the car park as well, that there's proper ecologists involved to make sure there's little disruption to the otters as a protected species. Come on, Jamesy Boo. How are you getting on, James? Have you seen many birds?
Yeah, I saw the black cap.
A black cap? Wow.
Oh. I don't know the black cap.
I think it sounds like a robin, kind of.
Okay. Now, I do know what a robin sounds like, because I have robins in my garden.
So this area here supports a lot of bird life, doesn't it, James?
Yeah.
So we often see kingfishers, like, zooming up and down the bank here, you know, the River Island. Yeah. We'll keep this. Like, it's not going to go away. It's not going to disappear. I mean, that's really what I want for this town, is for us to have this lovely natural area in the heart of the town where nature can thrive alongside people, you know, and just that we keep it.
From the marsh field here on the edge of Cabrini, we're going to make a short journey to Currahill to meet Gerald O'Brien, who has many memories of this town, but one in particular that lands us directly back here in the marsh field in the last years of the Second World War. Gerald, hello. Vincent.
Welcome, welcome.
Lovely.
Welcome.
What a beautiful view.
Yes, it's, the view is nice, right, into the valley. I often use it as inspiration.
I can see why. I might be doing the same myself.
I know.
Gerald O'Brien, proud Skibbereen man. I think you have a vivid memory from the Second World War. Yes.
It was April 21st, 1944. I was 9 years old in St. Patrick's School on Market Street here. So we heard a great noise. It was an aircraft, which was very near. A Handley Page Halifax bomber, but it was on a reconnaissance mission, a weather reconnaissance mission over the Bay of Biscay, and had been about 11 hours in the air. This, remember, was the year of the D-Day landings. And, of course, the weather reconnaissance were part of the preparation for that. Navigational problems arose and they were blown off course, so it would have to be a forced landing in Ireland. On its final run, it landed on the field called the Marsh beside the town here, and he was right overhead. It was extremely wise of our headmaster. We had only just come in from Playour, but he ordered us back out into the yard again to show the pilot that there were pupils. I'll never forget the sight. I couldn't see anyone inside the glass of the plane. She was powered by four Rolls-Royce Merlin 22s, so that made some noise together. And suddenly, we lost sight of it then. The noise stopped. And when we resumed class, our teacher said, "You'll be glad to hear that plane has landed safely in the marsh."
And you saw all of that. Remarkable. So the war coming that close to here.
Impossible to forget it.
Of course. Do you think young people now are as aware of the history and that?
No.
And how do we try to make sure that they do know their history?
No. Although I think they would raise their heads from the phone if they saw a plane coming out of the sky yet. That would move them very much so.
Coming up on the County Measure, a trip to Bear Island, St. Gubnet of Ballyvourne, and poetry with the young tongues of Cork City. Baltimore Harbour here in southwest Cork really reminds you of how closely connected this county is to the sea, the Atlantic, to maritime life. Gateway to Shirkin Island, to Cape Clear Island, this constant come and go of ferries, people, dogs, all life coming and going here. And famously, the town was ransacked by Barbary pirates in 1631. A few hundred people taken hostage. Most of them never came back. A handful returned. And the town was devastated. It's fairly recovered since. Lots of people now heading off in the sunlight for Shirkin Island.
I'm Claire. Mary.
We're making a series of radio programmes about the Countess of Ireland. This is number 26.
Would
score.
Cork not have been number one?
Well, of course it's number one, but it's not chronological in that way. Of course it's the biggest and the best.
Yeah.
Have you been to Sherkin before?
I have years ago when I was small. I'm like, we had a caravan in Skull. So Mary's from Newmarket and I'm from Ballincollig, so we are actually
Proper Cork. Yeah.
We live in Dublin though, so we feel like kind of like tourists
on our holidays.
You're home on your holidays.
Exactly. Yeah. Someone did mock me in work, saying like, "Oh, classic Cork person going on holidays in Cork."
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah,
especially with weather like this.
I know, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And we don't have to set up our tent. We have a tent set up, so we feel very smug.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And then we're delighted about that.
And then so they'll just be dancing, swimming.
Yeah, we have the dogs. And enjoying the sunny weather. Yeah. So this is probably one of the best weekends we've had.
So actually, it's worked out better that you've come here, 26th. Because actually, then you've got the best weather. Well, you couldn't have found two better people. Yes.
West along the road, passing through Macroom, Dunmanway, into particular landscape, which I suppose for centuries was a kind of refuge and harbour for rebels of various kinds, for outcasts, outlaws. And we're passing close to the famous Ballinum Law, site of the ambush and killing of Michael Collins, and going through Kilmichael, site of another famous and infamous and celebrated IRA ambush, which I suppose was part of a turning point in the War of Independence here. But going to the small town of Inchigeela to meet a poet who singles out one story from points of history, and James Harper will tell us why.
It's called the Inchigeela Old Cemetery and church. No glass in the windows and the ivy crawling up the tower. A very strange grave of a British soldier called Cecil Guthrie, who was an auxiliary and was involved in the Kilmichael ambush, where Tom Barry and the West Cork Brigade ambushed two lorries of auxiliaries on the way from Macroom to Dunmanway, and 16 were killed outright, and Guthrie managed to escape but was later tracked down and shot, and his body was placed in the bog. But 6 years later, his family managed to have his body exhumed and interred in this beautiful graveyard. We can see it over there. It's like a sort of elongated grey pyramid with a very simple inscription on it, as you'll see. In memory of Lieutenant Cecil J. Guthrie, November 28th, 1920.
Your own background then, James, as well?
Yes, I come from a mixed background. My dad was Irish from County Leash. My mum was British but grew up in Paris. And we settled here because my partner, Evelyn, her grandfather, Conor Donovan, was in the War of Independence and went to school with Michael Collins. His best man was Harry Boland. So we have, or my wife has, rebel roots here in West Cork. And I am very aware of the complexities of having an English accent, for example. But West Cork is famous for its English accents, so I'm not totally out of place. But I love the history of the area. But to have Cecil Guthrie bedded down in the locality seemed to be very poignant which is why I wrote a poem about him.
Would you read the poem?
I would. Well, I'll read part of it. This poem is called The Churchyard Ghost in West Cork. So my poem is from the point of view of the ghost of Guthrie asking passers-by to put wild flowers on his grave to effect some sort of release. Visitor, please come over here. Yes, you who walk among the tombs towards the chapel, where you'll see the only ornament is ivy and windows frame the flight of birds. Come here and say a prayer for me, or place a flower on my grave, even a dandelion or vetch, to help me leave this world. Do this, and you will have my gratitude and blessings. Please don't refuse. Just think, if you were in my place, you may be young, but days slip by, and omnis una manet nox, there's one night waiting for us all. I know you're in a rush, but stay. It won't take long to say a prayer. Then you can go, rejoin your life.
Gansi mi glasa nagur sintel shab ochruch minting shakran ogus gansirim dum valguchish for kunis klo for inche fall. Is nireket fastet en grar og lusan, to valle vone gvai me vals.
Heading west along the road in Cork, on a high bog road to the Muskerry Gaeltacht and the town of Ballyvourne, all its associations with a particular saint sacred to these parts, Saint
Gubnet.
Over an old stone bridge, and here's a beautiful old burial ground with the graves of composer Sean O'Riordan and poets Sean O'Riordan, Liam O'Murhilla and Sean Dunn. It's also the shrine of St. Gubnet, and two local women, Irish language planning officer Eileen E. Linnard and archaeologist Connie Kelleher, meet me there in a place they love.
Eileen E. Linnard, Connie Kelleher, it's lovely to be here in the heart of St. Gubnet's country.
It's getting better.
It is.
We're standing here.
Beautiful setting, this beautiful valley. And Seamus Murphy's wonderful statue, his sculpture of St. Gubnet behind us. Tell us, Connie, a little bit about the story of Gubnet.
Gubnet is one of our early female saints. 6th century, travelled down the west coast of Ireland from the Mayo Connacht region. So all along the way she saw different numbers of white deer. And as she got nearer and nearer, they increased, and she knew then when she arrived in Ballyvourne.
It had been prophesied that wherever she saw, was it 7 white deer?
Nine white deer, she should build her church.
The fact that she's founded her nunnery here in Gort na Tubrit, the Garden of the Wells, that's the Irish of Gort na Tubrit. You know, people come and they take the water home, and there's a healing actually just being here in her presence. She's just buried beside you there in this beautiful mound of grass. It's almost like a hill, a small hillock. A car, which is a gathering of stones. There's big flagstone here in front of us where people kneel to pray. And it's been worn down with people rubbing it. And people have left all kinds of mementos. There's a little angel, you have tea lights, you have rosary beads. And as you can see here as well, there's a worn down path running all around the circle where she's buried, and that's from people walking around meditatively saying their prayers, 7 Our Father, 7 Hail Marys and 7 Glory Bees, and you have to go around 7 times. So over the years this beautiful path has been worn down, and it's quite an obvious path.
It's so evocative. It's wonderful.
You know, when I was growing up, my name was Eileen Gubnett, and I didn't particularly like my name when I was growing up. But I kind of reflected on it and reflected on St. Gubnett. Mm. And, you know, she must have been a very strong person to build her community
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
Because the landscape at the time would have been a tribal landscape. The local lords were the O'Herlihys or the Eherlihy. She would have coaxed the lord then into giving her her lands. If that's what happened, then she was very clever in how she approached those living in the community.
A planner and a pragmatist. So you were able then to proudly claim the name.
Absolutely.
It's a real badge of honour now to have the name of honour, yeah. You know?
And we're so delighted that the naval base in Cork named one of their new ships St. Gubnett.
From the maritime perspective, the tradition is that she sailed down from Mayo. Boats would have been part of her tradition. She came from a coastal county. So you kind of bring all the seafaring into the whole story of St. Gubnett as well.
St. Gubnett can sail again.
You're listening to The County Measure, and we're in Cork.
The blue splendour of the Atlantic ahead, heading west, driven past through Glengariff, Bantry Bay, this extraordinary landscape, Atlantic rainforest, essentially. Heading for Bear Island, heading off now to catch the ferry over to the island. Of course, the island was part of the territory of the O'Sullivan Bears, the great chieftains, and full of history, full of interest, and I'm really looking forward to setting foot on it. On a beautiful Saturday morning, I meet retired Garda Faulkner O'Donovan, and we take his car on the short ferry crossing to Bear Island from the pontoon just a few kilometres from Castletown Bear.
We've just landed in Tranagall. We've gone up here past the St. Michael's Church.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen so many foxgloves anywhere as I've seen here in West Cork.
Really? Yeah. And you've travelled around a bit?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a Holy Cross here. You can see it there in the horizon. It's illuminated at night for the last, I suppose, 25, 30 years. And I remember one night in Castletown Bear, there was a stranger flag me down. I was on patrol. And he said, "Gert," he said, "am I seeing things?" He said, "Is there a cross up in the sky there?" I think he thought Judgment Day had arrived or something. We're going to Rerin Village now on the east end of the island. And we're meeting Barry Hanley. Barry is a retired school teacher, a native of the island, and he's moved back here after retirement. And he's involved in a lot of things, you know, community-based things. He's over the Heritage Group. So I'll introduce you to Barry.
This is Rerin Village, Lawrence Cove Harbour. Just straight in front of us here, that stone pier, that was the first bit of infrastructure that was built by the British War Department. Just before 1800, Lawrence Cove Harbour that we're looking at. Yeah. When the War of Independence was over, when the negotiations were happening, the British side wanted to keep the three ports of Lochswilly, Cork Harbour and Bearhaven. Yeah. Right. So here you had part of the island was controlled by the British military police, and the rest was then under the new Irish government at the time, yeah, up to 1938.
All of that history is here.
There was a famine here as late as 1898. You know, there was famine in rural areas like the northern side of the peninsula and around the Ardrigal area. There was people dying. The population here was well over 25,000 before the famine. Today, it's just over 5,000.
Faulkner, you obviously enjoy coming out here to Bear Island from time to time and wandering about.
I do, Vincent. Yeah, I mean, I felt at home here the first day I landed. I'm from Skibbereen originally. I was in the Guards. I came down from Dublin here in 1992. And the first thing I noticed, you'd go along the road and people would wave at you, or you'd walk down the street and people would say hello to you and smile and talk and stop talking to you. And I said, my God, I've landed in paradise.
You live here, Barry, and
I do know, yeah.
Good, thriving community.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. Now, there's a lot of marine industry here. We have a boat yard over in the middle of the island, a dry dock that's employing up to 20 people or more, I'd say. We have tug business, LCM, they install marinas, and all those industries are all marine-related.
And then you have the two ferries bringing people in and out every day. Yeah, and that's presumably a fairly constant stream of visitors, of tourists. And
It's seasonal. We get lots of walkers coming in, say maybe the more off-peak times. We have less than 200 people, but very active community and a lot of support for people.
And of course, Fáchner, I know that you've retired from the Gardaí, but I think you work part-time now in the undertaking business.
I suppose by previous occupation, we would have been used to dealing with remains and, more importantly, next of kin. The local undertaker, Paul Harrington, asked me last year would I come on board with him just, you know, to do funerals and that, because he's got a hardware shop in Castledownbere as well. So I said I'd love to. And it's a privilege, really, to do that. You can help people, that is, especially when the deaths are tragic or of young people or something.
I mean, it's such a particular time, and it's always a time of transition, and a good, sensitive undertaker plays a really important role in our human exchanges.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's important as well, even after the funeral is over, to get in touch even once afterwards, maybe a week or two afterwards, and small things. I mean, our own time will come, and we've all lost people we love.
Small things become big things.
Yes, yeah.
It's great to talk to you.
Much appreciated.
Lovely
to
be here. It's lovely to be here. Heading north, the roads around Mallow, Fermoy and Mitchelstown are busy with trucks and lorries. We're in the agricultural heartland of the Golden Vale. Stopping in Kanturk, from the Irish Kianturk, or the Boar's Head, I get talking to a local man, Dominic Burns, who has just finished his day's work in the North Cork Co-op Creamery.
Is that one of your trucks?
That's one of ours now, yeah.
Okay, North Cork Creameries.
North Cork Creameries, yeah.
Cooperative.
Yeah. The old creamery, that was it. They make butter and powder, and they still do their own liquid milk. They have their own liquid milk delivery still to the shops still, even though rural Ireland is decimated in shops now. So it is. In my own parish, we've no shop, no one closed there lately, and it was on the main Killarney Mallow Road. This is the barony of Duhalla. I'm from a place called Drumtariff, between, we'll say, Mill Street and Bantia. If you came through this town on a Friday evening, you couldn't get through. The bounty people coming from Cork, we'll say, from over, as we call it, Ned, through Bantia, into heading for Newmarket, Listowel, this side over, coming from Mallow for Listowel, all that side of the country. So they're working in Cork, but that's where all their work is, sure. That's where all the big industries are now in Cork. Mill Street are lucky enough, they have Alps Electric still in Mill Street, so that's a big employer. Munster Joinery is, Ballydesmond, a huge employer, huge. Cork is the best county, you should know that. Yeah, the Republic of Cork, like.
Well, I never doubted it, really.
Unless you're from some other county, really. Yeah.
Glad now we stopped to talk to you.
So that's it, lads.
Cork, city and county, is a place of endlessly rich language and many tongues. Something of the mix and diversity of the place is gathered under the creative banner of Good Day Cork. And before we leave the county, we're off to meet some of the people involved in that initiative and the festival, Young Tongues of Cork.
Hi, my name's Joanna Dukipati. I am the founding editor of Good Day Cork, a multimedia magazine and an event space that began in 2018.
And tell me a little bit about the festival then.
Oh, yes, the Young Tongues of Cork. It's an afternoon of the 10th of August at the Test Site Project. The call out was for young people who are members of unheard and underrepresented communities between the age of 18 and 25. And there'll be music, there'll be prose, there'll be poetry. People will listen, hopefully cry, maybe enjoy with positive anger and leave the space as well.
And we're here in the lovely grounds of UCC, and we have two of the Young Tongues who are taking part in the festival here.
Hi, my name is Tamua Morris. I am a student in UCC. I'm in my third year. I've been studying philosophy and English, and I'm a poet and also a writer.
Tell me what you write and what you seek to express in your writing.
So I started writing poetry in secondary school. I was inspired by Sylvia Plath mostly. Moving here as a kid means I grew up in the Irish culture, and yet in my house it's still the Nigerian culture. So, you know, I read a lot of poetry, kind of experiencing that identity crisis, I guess, if you want to call it that. And there is a lot of, like, you know, discrimination, subtle discrimination, especially as like a black woman. What they usually kind of say is subtle words, and like, oh, like black women are so aggressive, or you're just really being loud, and you know, that emasculation of black women. So being able to pour that out through writing helps me to kind of deal with it more.
Hi, my name is Kel Menton. I'm a writer and I work in youth theatre as well in Cork.
And you, your first book, I think, is coming out next year.
Yes, it is, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So it's coming out in February. It's a young adult novel called A Fix of Light. So it's really exciting. It's my first book.
It's hopefully a lovely title, last. A Fix of Light. And am I right in thinking that it's a trans love story?
Yes, yeah. It's about one trans boy and one cis boy who fall in love in West Cork over a summer. But there's kind of Irish mythology, magic mixed in, and hijinks occur.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. It sounds like you're breaking ground with that. Yeah.
I hope so.
And then tell me about what the festival means to you, and what the involvement in all of this, and what Joe is doing, you know, what it means for you.
Like, writing is a very solitary act or career, so it's always lovely to meet other people that are doing it, and that is people that are your age, and also just have a little platform to share what I'm doing and also to see what's out there.
One of my biggest passions, which is why I want to go into teaching actually, is to encourage youth to realize that they are very special, they're very talented, and they are the present, and they are also the future, and they should never like hide that or feel ashamed or feel embarrassed at all.
Maybe tell us where we are now in the campus here at UCC.
So right now we're in like the green, just near the Glucksmann Gallery, just by the entrance of UCC gates. This place is beautiful. Many people come here for walks with their pets, with their families.
It's beautiful to look up at this ferny bank, all these wonderful lush green ferns, and our canopy of leaves overhead. Beautiful spot.
Beautiful. And I have the perfect poem for that. It's called Lie Here. Wind in my hair, no fear, I'm not scared. Freedom exists here, between the gushes of a comforting wind. Lie here, lie here. The earth beckons my body and soul. For once, I'm not scared. For a while, I'll lie here.
Cork, Kharki, is the biggest county in Ireland, and within its borders is a myriad of communities, stories, linked and sometimes conflicting histories.
almost immeasurable in its scale, cultural, linguistic, geographic, and endlessly diverse. One can't but think of the old line about the real capital of Ireland in both city and county. So much of our national story and international web of connection is centred here. So many journeys start and end here. From the old, enduring spirit of the Coal Quay market to the new, young voices of the changing city and county, Cork is a deep spring sustaining us all.